Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Please inspire the governors in this country to make wise judgments, mindful of the important balance of concerns for health as well as economy.
Lockdowns, where we enforce these things, require people to stay home, force businesses to close, where we simply make no allowance for voluntary compliance, that's too far, and there's also not really any evidence that this actually helps anything.
And it's not about whether you like Brett Kavanaugh, or you think he's a great judge or justice, or whether you would or would not like to see him on the court. It is evil to try to destroy a man simply because you don't share his politics.
One of the things that's happened with evangelicalism, because they don't have the sacraments, the means of grace, the baptism for them is a symbol. It's a human work. The Lord's Supper is a memorial meal. It's a human work. God's word is not even efficacious. It's information that we have to act on. That makes the realm of all of God's gracious activity as internal.
Confessional Lutheran Deadheads, Love, Issues, etc.
Well, things for faith-based colleges and universities were tough already. Many, many of them were living literally from tuition payment to tuition payment. They did not have the large endowments that they could dig in when enrollment was down. They did not have very wide margins. And now they're shut down indefinitely. And nobody really knows what the next academic year at any college or university, much less the faith-based ones, is going to look like and whether or not many of them will survive. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon, the 22nd of April. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Terry Mattingly joins us for the first half hour. We're going to talk about the coronavirus crisis and faith-based higher education. Then our series, The Words of Scripture, today the word is patience, with Pastor Will Whedon continues. Joining us to talk about the coronavirus crisis and how it has and will affect faith-based higher education, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
I know that the status of the fall 2020 college classes is completely up in the air for everybody, but are there reasons to think that Christian schools will be facing unique threats?
There's lots of reasons to think that, but the first thing you need to do is try to figure out why everyone in higher ed was already on pins and needles right now, looking at a very important milestone in 2025 or 26. I have seen the chart both ways. And at this point, we're talking about three different groups. We're talking about taxpayer-funded state schools. We're talking about private schools in general, which would include some of the most prestigious universities in America. And then third, we're talking about the very unique world of Christian higher education. A lot of it denominational, a lot of it kind of movement-oriented, like a school like Wheaton College that would be ecumenically evangelical. Same thing for like a Taylor or Gordon. A lot of schools that used to have strong denominational ties don't have those ties anymore. So we have three different groups of schools that we kind of have to maneuver through here. So first, let's talk about the big threat they all face. And basically, this is something that I can remember first seeing it put up on a chart when I moved to Washington, D.C., in about 2004, 2005, to work at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities when we created the full semester Washington Journalism Program. And I remember they had a chart of the different generations. And of course, everybody knows the baby boomer generation is like the largest generation of all time, except for the millennials. And of course, now we've got millennial jokes about hiring millennials and all this other stuff on YouTube. But just think about the numbers. Basically, this gigantic tsunami of young people will run its course and be over in about 2025, 2026. So enrollments, you could say, even with all the struggles that schools have had and everything else, enrollments have been unusually large for the last decade to decade and a half. Both of my kids are millennials. My daughter kind of toward the front of it, my son in the middle. But that big wave of statistics is going to die on the beach in about 4 years. So everyone was already worried about that. How much will we have to cut back? I mean, because birth rates are down. Some people are being kind of sucked off into the world of online education already. And then you have a lot of states like Tennessee, where I live, that have placed a tremendous emphasis on free, quality junior college certificate work, especially in the sciences and in technology. And I know a lot of students that have decided, well, I'm just going to do my first year or two at the local community college for like next to nothing, and then I'll go to the University of Tennessee, or then I'll go to the Christian college of my choice. Now, the school's glad to have those people arrive as juniors, but that's 2 years of tuition and dormitory rent and everything else that's already gone. Each and every trend I just talked about, we've already known this was coming for almost two decades. Because people who can read demographics, once we had the size of the millennial generation down on paper, everybody went, oh, what are we going to do when it's gone? Okay. So now you throw in the coronavirus crisis. And you could say, to use a phrase from C.S. Lewis, that in some cases these colleges have been dealt a very severe mercy, in that while they've been trying to put off things or use some of their old methods of enrollment, we can talk about that later if you want to, all of a sudden the coronavirus crisis has brought the financial crunch 4 years early. And they're having to look this thing right in the face. And at this point, as you and I are talking, we honestly don't know what these schools are going to do, because we don't know what the situation will be with the virus by next fall. A lot of people are assuming that people will be in school, but then they're also predicting a wave, a second wave of coronavirus cases when winter arrives and the traditional flu season kicks in late November or December. Well, just what everybody needs is to get back for another semester and then have to lock everybody out again right before Thanksgiving or something like that. Well, you can also understand that this is probably affecting recruiting. For the last couple of years, I've been working with the King's College in New York City as kind of a senior fellow, you know, teaching a major journalism class. And I know that the challenges of that school, a lot of them have to do with whether evangelical families want to send their children to New York City. Well, do you think any evangelical families across America are having second thoughts about New York right now? But there are similar things that play out for other colleges and universities as well. I don't want to leave anyone with the impression that the King's College is in some sort of unique situation. But I was struck, this is a little bit jargony, but I was struck by a report that I read by the McKinsey and Company Research Consulting Company. And they first of all said, and this is rare to read a consulting memo that's kind of in common English, they said, right now, lots of people have realized that, quote, hunkering down at home with a laptop is a world away from the rich campus life that existed in February. So that's the good news. There are a lot of people who have decided, I don't want to do a traditional college education, especially in the liberal arts. I don't want to do that on a laptop while paying full tuition for it, especially. So that's the good news. A lot of people are finding out they don't want to do online. Ah, but this also implies there may be some people out there who are finding out they do like online education. So glass half empty, glass half full. So here's the passage that struck me. In the virus recurrence and pandemic escalation scenarios, higher education institutions could see much less predictable yield rates. That's the percentage of those admitted who attend. The people you say, we'd love you to come, but they don't show up, that number could go up. It would be first-year students decide to take a gap year or attend somewhere closer to home and less costly because of the expectation of longer-term financial challenges for their families. Ah, there's another threat. How many of these students you were recruiting, their families have had their financial situations change? And that term, gap year, is something that already has been growing in popularity. And that is finishing high school and taking an entire year off to work to put some money in the bank, maybe take a couple of classes at a junior college, and then go to the college or university of your choice. That's kind of like what we were talking about a second ago. So here's all of these different factors, and we haven't even got to the unique challenges of Christian colleges yet. So how many of the factors I've already mentioned had you thought about and worked through?
Well, I happen to work for somebody who works closely in Christian higher education, so I've thought about a lot of those.
Yeah.
The one that I think is probably going to be the most impactful for education across the board is, you know, I don't know if I had to eat in my 401k or something like that. I don't know if I want to send my kid to school when there's a JUCO right around the corner that he can get credits at much cheaper. What about the Christian colleges who are operating with the very barest of financial margins already?
Well, this gets into the fact that the Christian colleges are all a part of the subset of private education. Now, this is when it's basically you don't have state money coming. You have gifts, and you have constituency groups, and you have alumni, and you have donors. And to what degree have you kept those people happy? And to what degree have you created programs that people want to pay money for to be able to attend your Christian college or university, as opposed to, like you said, the JUCO down the street or less expensive options? Now, this gets us into some things that's going to sound very familiar to our listeners, because to some degree, these are some of the same factors that we have talked about with plateaued church membership and other issues related to Missouri Synod Lutherans, but lots of other groups. And I've been following with interest the situation with the Missouri Synod Lutheran colleges, because in the past you thought of your crowd as having these tremendously strong feeder schools, you know, elementary, middle school, and high school, that would pump people into the Concordias, and you presumed a kind of a strong denominational identity there. And correct me, and we'll talk about this in a second, correct me if I'm wrong, but I get the impression that some of the Concordias are doing pretty well, and these tend to be the ones that have good locations, and they've maintained some strong sense of Lutheran identity, where there are other Concordias that have pumped in lots of students who maybe are not crazy about the vision or the mission of these schools, and you're not going to be surprised to find out those will be some of the first people out of the exit door, you know, if there's a huge crisis. Okay, so first of all, we've got just declining numbers in a lot of denominations. Second, we have declining birth rates. All over America, suburban families have been getting smaller. One of the exceptions to this is homeschool families and more traditional religious families. But there you go. There's a double-edged sword right there. Can you create a college that creates intensely religious homeschool families happy at the same time you're reaching out to appeal to marginally religious people who just want to attend your school? That's a really hard formula to come up with. Third, we actually have in many denominations right now some pretty powerful theological disputes. And I would say that even in the world of Baptist education and in the world of evangelical colleges, we're beginning to see very strong tensions between what many of their faculty believe their schools are about on women's issues, sexuality issues, social justice issues. There's a big tension between those faculty and their own trustees, and with the trustees kind of standing for the parents and the churches back home. These theological disputes are going to make it hard to make hard choices about what's going to happen to some of these schools. If you're going to have to cut back, who gets to decide what gets cut? And would the faculty and the trustees agree on that? There's a huge battle over a theology school at a Southern Baptist school out in West Texas right now on this exact score. We also have the fact that America's becoming a lot more Latino, Asian, and a lot of our denominations, to be perfectly frank, look a little white, and they're having trouble competing with state schools and full scholarships for the kind of brilliant Latino, Asian, and African American students who can get the scholarships to get them on their campuses. I remember in the 90s when I taught at Milligan College, we had lots of African American students that really wanted to attend Milligan. The problem was these brilliant young people were being offered full ride scholarships at secular private schools or state schools. And how many families can turn down free tuition in order to go to a Christian college that they really identify with more? And then you get down to another thing. In higher education, frequently the key issue is location, location, location. And if you're beginning to have to cut back and you're having trouble getting people to just naturally come to your school, I'm thinking of several different schools when I say this, and I don't want to be seen as slamming some of these schools. But the old traditional Christian college model of a small denominational school in a small town in the middle of nowhere in the piney woods of East Texas or out in a cornfield in the Midwest, those schools don't have as much of a surrounding community base coming out of churches as a school, say, that's in Houston or Dallas-Fort Worth. And if people wanted to say, well, I'd like to live with my parents for the first 2 years and then I'll go on campus, that's a lot easier if you live in a major city nearby. And you say, well, major cities can be real expensive. That's true, but not all of them are. And especially across the Sun Belt, there are some fairly affordable major cities to put schools in. But we tend to put Christian colleges away from the temptations of the big city, which, as we always called Baylor in Waco, its nickname was Jerusalem on the Brazos, where it's 25 miles to the nearest sin. Maybe 50 was the way people used to say it. Obviously, people who didn't know much about Baylor or Waco. But all of these images of Christian higher education raise the stakes for them. And I think the single most important one here is, how much strong support do you still have from your denomination and your core families? Or has your school become sort of watered down? And quite frankly, these parents and these churches and these pastors no longer identify with it. When the crisis comes, like coronavirus, how faithful are those people going to be to make the hard choice to send their students to your school? So, you already have a lot of these schools that are in trouble. In a column I wrote this week, I quoted an article from Forbes, which does a lot of college research. And the name of this article was Dawn of the Dead. That'll get your attention. Forbes found 675 private colleges it labeled tuition-dependent schools, meaning they squeak by year after year, often losing money or eating into their dwindling endowments. Folks, 675 is a lot of private colleges. The Council for Christian Colleges and Universities has about 110 explicitly Christian schools associated with it. So I don't know how many of those schools are living year to year on tuition, but you know there have to be some. because just the entire world of private college education right now is being so hard hit. Forbes said that a significant number of these tuition-dependent schools are, quote, nearly insolvent at this time. And that's before the coronavirus.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. He's senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the ripple effects. It was not very strong to begin with. The virus swept in, shut everybody down. No one knows the future. There are attendant issues as well, and we'll talk about them next.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We're devoted to our Lutheran confession and committed to strong academics. Please encourage your child, grandchild, or godchild to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
Your church Easter egg hunt has been cancelled, but that doesn't mean there aren't wonderful treasures to be discovered at Ad Crucem. Celebrate your child's confirmation with Lutheran certificates, necklaces, and memory boxes, and wish all your loved ones a joyous, if socially distanced, Eastertide with our Christ-focused greeting cards. Put what you believe, teach, and confess on display with our Apostles' Creed, Nicene Creed, and Athanasian Creed. Visit adcrucem.com. That's adcrucem.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the coronavirus crisis and faith-based higher education. Terry Mattingly is our guest, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. In about 10 minutes, we'll continue our series, The Words of Scripture, talking with Pastor Will Whedon about the word patience. Here is a wrinkle, Terry, that I think organizations like Forbes may be well to look into. The system that we have in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, we have a lot of universities. They're all facing, they all have very thin margins, and they're all facing the same kind of problems you discussed before the break. But there's also maybe a too big to fail element in it because we have a unified pension and healthcare system we independently insure. And you drop that many workers out of the system in a couple years' time, and you are putting everybody who works in association with the church body, pastors, school teachers, who are all under these plans, you put them in some pretty hot water. Talk about that, if you would.
Okay, man, that's a wrinkle I hadn't thought of. But let me be blunt about it. That demographic issue is not going to go away. And also, to some degree, we've been living through an era when everyone was tempted to think of it as the non-denominational age. Well, non-denominational people don't tend to pour their money, their loyalty, and their alumni support into non-denominational somethings. You know what I mean? Vague religious identity tends to produce vague schools that have vague levels of support. after the reading I've done on this and the people I've talked to, I'm really convinced that a lot of schools are going to face the challenge of getting deliberately smaller so that they have less to fund and they get back to what they consider their core identity, at which point they need smaller numbers of students and smaller budgets to provide the education that they thought they were going to provide in the first place. The thing that happens frequently is these schools try to grow their way out of their financial problems, and they create marginally Christian or new academic programs that are vaguely connected to why the school was created and why it's there. And then they fill those degrees with lots of people who have vague connections to their campus. And now those begin to get cut away. I was thinking of the Portland Concordia situation where you had lots and lots of students who were in a kind of a, frankly, what it sounded to me from reading the articles, like a fairly secular education program. All of a sudden, that's threatened by attacks from the LGBTQ community. And if you think that attacks on Christian colleges by activists of various causes are going to stop, then they've got bridges they'll sell you in New York. That's a legal trend that isn't going to go away. And the demographic trend isn't going to go away. And the shrinking size of the families isn't going to go away. So what I argue, quoting an educator named John Mark Reynolds at a school in Houston, he's convinced that these schools have got to decide to downscale, and they need to do it before they are forced to do it. They need to do it while they still have enough of a sense of community and enough support from their denominations to be able to make intelligent choices about what the denominations and their families actually want the schools to teach. What are the core missional values that they need to advocate? I got interested in writing a column about this topic after reading an article at Rodrier's site about a small Catholic school in Baton Rouge where almost everybody that's there, they're doing very traditional Catholic liberal arts. But this school has a special heart to prepare nurses and pre-med and people in various medical professions. And they don't have athletics. They don't have a lot of frills. Hardly anybody, or maybe nobody, lives on campus. And they've kept their price down. The school, John Mark Reynolds School in Houston, St. Constantine School, provides college education through Oxford-style tutorials. And their tuition for an entire year, which includes books, supplies, and all mandatory on-campus events, $9,000 a year. Does that sound fairly competitive?
Sounds like a dream come true.
Well, and this Catholic school, I believe their tuition is $10,000 a year. Okay. Now, you also have schools that are going to decide whether they really want to put up or shut up in this. Just the other day, I opened what I thought was just a routine PR piece from Franciscan University in Steubenville, a very impoverished area in terms of the community, a dead steel mill town outside of Pittsburgh. Franciscan is an interesting story in Christian higher education. It was a fading, liberalized Catholic school that got all the priests and the monks on the campus got involved in the charismatic renewal movement, and this school burst back to life. It's now nationally known for producing like 400 to 500 priests in the last decade or so. And it's alive. Well, they're facing this crisis. So I got this press release from Franciscan University in Steubenville. And basically what it said is a really bold plan. All new students on that campus this fall are going to pay zero tuition. So freshmen coming in and upperclassmen who transfer in, all the newcomers, no tuition, period. I think it's a pretty bold move. They have found strong donors, and they're going to tap their endowment, and everybody goes to Franciscan for free this fall on the tuition level. Have to pay for room and board, you know, and whatever else, but free tuition. Sounds like Franciscan's pretty serious about trying to hang in there, and they've given lots of other evidence that they're serious. And here's the key. Franciscan has got a lot of Catholic families who support them like crazy, and they have a lot of parishes that support them. There are a lot of small, struggling Catholic schools that have shed up a lot of their Catholic identity that may not have bishops, parishes, alumni, and people with four or five kids who want to support them. So to tie this all up, I think the big idea here is, do you know what your school's about? Do you know, if you had to cut your school in half, what are the degrees you would save and why? And are those degrees something that your trustees, your donors, your parents, and their students, that they really want and that they'll commit to? Do you know who you are as a college or university? And also, what are you willing to do to help get the price down? And boy, you want to have some lively faculty meetings in some schools. You start debating these things. But none of these factors are going to go away. And the coronavirus has merely clicked the clock 4 years ahead to make people have to think about these things.
Terry, here's a quote from John Mark Reynolds in your On Religion column this week. Quote, lots of people need to change and get smaller, which means they have to make hard choices. They will have to decide what they are going to do and why they are going to do it.
Yeah.
They will have to stand for something. This isn't what people in higher education want to hear, but these issues are not going away. Yeah. What is he saying?
That's kind of what I just was paraphrasing him. But I think the key phrase there that maybe we end on, you have to decide what you're going to do and why you're going to do it. And in the world of Christian higher education, it helps if that why you're going to do it has something to do with the communities around you that most naturally are going to send students to your campus, whether that's the surrounding city or the state or the region, or whether that's your denomination as a community. Do you know why you're doing what you're doing? John Mark and other people that I've talked to in recent years say a lot of schools have gotten so busy just trying to survive and outgrow their financial problems by, oh, if we add that degree, we can pull in another 100 students. Oh, if we add a football team, we can get 50 tuition-paying guys who don't want to quit playing football. And maybe they won't be Christians, but that's okay. We'll hold their hands and we'll get them through the experience of going to our school. All of that is survival talk. At some point, schools are going to have to decide, who are we? What do we want to save? And what is that going to look like and sound like when we tell churches, denominational leaders, our trustees, and parents why we're making these decisions? This is going to be an identity crisis just as much as it's a financial crisis.
Terry Mattingly is senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's also founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks, and we'll talk with you next week.
Glad to be here.
Our series, The Words of Scripture, continues on the other side of the break. We'll be talking about the word patience in the Old Testament and the New Testament with Pastor Will Whedon, host of the daily 15-minute Bible study produced by Lutheran Public Radio, called The Word of the Lord Endures Forever. Prayers for anxiety, assurance, forgiveness, plagues, sickness. The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for April contains more than 500 prayers that cover almost any situation. It's titled Lutheran Prayer Companion. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or find out more and purchase Lutheran Prayer Companion by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for April, Lutheran Prayer Companion.
At Zion Lutheran Church, Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, we've adopted the motto, A Changeless Christ for a Changing World. While many congregations try to market a message that appeals to what a changing world wants, we continue to give a constantly changing world what it needs. A changeless Christ in word and sacraments like the church has done for 2,000 years. If you're in Chippewa Falls and would like to have the forgiveness of sins, eternal life, and salvation that Jesus won on the cross and delivers today in his church, please join us poor, miserable sinners. For more information, visit cfzionlutheran.com.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Lutheran Federal Credit Union serves the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod community with car and personal loans, mortgages, credit cards, checking and savings accounts. Lutheran FCU supports LCMS organizations with its Spotlight Ministry program, and Lutheran Federal Credit Union allows you to make purchases with Apple Pay, Google Pay, and Samsung Pay using your digital wallet. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Good for you, good for the church, Lutheran Federal Credit Union, LutheranFCU.org.
The world around us raises all sorts of reasons why Christ could not have risen from the dead. The April issue of the Lutheran Witness discusses how we can, in fact, know that Christ rose from the dead. Adam Francisco answers resurrection objections. Kirk Clayton explains how the Bible proves Christ's resurrection, and there's so much more. Here, Lutherans have an opportunity. For a world focused on fear of death and COVID-19, we can point them to the resurrected Christ. To learn more about this, visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the world from a Lutheran perspective. cph.org/witness.